Okay, so one of the other big stories of the last couple of days has been this story that broke that the Russians had hacked into the computers, at least of the Democratic National Committee, mm-hmm. and they were in there looking for stuff about Trump.
And that they had access, which I find unbelievable, to the network for about a year. You can get a lot of stuff over the course of a year if you have that kind of access.
Yeah. Yeah.
They said donor information, DNC strategy information, and the opposition research on Mr. Trump.
Now you wonder if they got into the RNC too.
Mm-hmm.
And what is now, what exactly is Russia up to? That is the question that I think we all have now, because Russia and the United States seem to be at loggerheads about a lot of things, whether it's Crimea or whether it is international trade, cybersecurity. They're poking at each other. It's interesting that Putin is on a bit of a press, campaign is a better way to put it, over the last year in the United States. He sat down with 60 Minutes. And when you saw that, you're like, oh.
What's going on?
This guy's trouble.
Why is he here? What's he doing?
And it was the same 60 Minutes episode that aired in the fall that had both he and Trump on it. And Trump was like, I was on with him, okay? We're friends, okay?
He acted like they were in the same room and hung out. But then it turned out that, no, they weren't.
Yeah, not even the least. And why would Trump want to suck up to Vladimir Putin, who is seen by a lot around the by many around the world as a very dangerous figure, and not a friend to democracy or the United States, certainly, but seen as a global gamesman who can take advantage for Mother Russia. Now, with that as a backdrop, we're going to talk to Arkady Ostrovsky, who has written a book called "The Invention of Russia." Fascinating book that kind of takes you through post-Soviet era of Russia. And how is Putin?
What's he doing?
He as powerful as he is. So, Arkady, thank you very much for being with us. It's a fascinating read, and I appreciate your time here, sir.
No, thank you for inviting me. It's a great pleasure.
Now, explain let's start with Putin for a second. Now, Putin was formerly a KGB guy when it was the Soviet Union. He found his way politically, was the mayor of Moscow, right?
The mayor of St. Petersburg, actually.
Yeah. I'm sorry, St. Petersburg, that's right, my fault. And then found his way to ascend to the leader of Russia, stepped down for a while, put another guy in who you could literally see the strings on this guy, right, when he would talk, and then took it all back. Now, why has Putin made himself so irreplaceable?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, Putin is really seen in Russia now not as a president. I mean, Putin is seen in Russia as a czar. He's sort of bigger than his job. He's seen as a national leader. I mean, he's been in power for 16 years now. If you remember, he actually stepped down for 4 years between 2008 and 2012. When he installed his sidekick, Dmitry Medvedev, as president, but he retained all the power, and that was just yet another proof to the Russian people that even without his office, he remained the czar. You know, that was a test of real power. Now, how he stayed in power is a good question. I mean, there were two things, really. To start with, he was very lucky. Russian economy started to grow just as he came to the office. The oil price started to rise. That fueled consumption boom. Living standards improved. Incomes went up massively in the years that's been in power. And he had this social contract with the people, which was essentially you can spend as much as you want and earn and just enjoy life and stay out of politics. Just leave politics to us. And a lot of people signed up to it. Now, in the past few years, when the oil price started to fall and when the economy started to shrink, he needed a substitute for that. He needed to come out with something that would compensate people for living standards which are now falling. And that something was the idea of imperial nationalism. He appealed to the sense of loss of the Soviet Empire that people felt very acutely, and came up with this narrative of making Russia great again, making it a great power.
We've heard that before.
Where have we heard that before?
Yeah, I know. Well, this is very striking, isn't it? I mean, the sort of similarity in language and similarity in breaking taboos and saying the unsayable and enjoying the fact, the shock it kind of creates, it is very similar.
The Kremlin spokesperson came out today about this whole hacking scandal with the DNC and Russia's potential involvement, and they said they completely rule out any possibility the Russian government had anything to do with this, and they told that to Reuters in Moscow. Do you think there's a chance that the Russian government had something to do with this?
I wouldn't put too much faith in what the Russian spokesman is saying. Look, I mean, the Russians have been running these troll factories, the hackers. I mean, they might not be directly employed by the Kremlin, but I find it very hard to believe that Russian security services had absolutely nothing to do with it. Now, to me, the question is, what on earth were they trying to achieve? Were they just trying to help Trump? If so, you know, I'm not sure that's going to do him great service. Even though the two men seem to like each other a lot, which I find actually very alarming.
Well, I mean, okay, let's stop for a second there, because I want to understand this. Do we think that they've actually had any kind of ex parte communication here? Do we know that they seem to admire? Well, first of all, I don't know if Putin admires anybody, right? I think he looks at the United States as a strategic enemy and has to figure out exactly how to get around it. And probably if you would like to see America get weaker in the long run, actually in the short run for sure, then Trump would be your – that's the guy that you would have, because he's the chaos theory, right? Mm-hmm. He would destabilize a bunch of – in the short term, destabilize a bunch of government operations agencies, perhaps even the dollar itself, I mean, with all the rhetoric that he's used. So if he does, in fact, do that, then that's very, very good for Russia, right? They get to be the stable player in the global economic war. But then Trump – thinking that Putin is like a good guy, I don't understand that. I mean, there's such evidence that Putin is a very bad guy.
Sure, and he says,
yeah, I think it's actually possibly slightly more complicated than that. I mean, Putin, as you say, has been a sort of a villain. I mean, he's been an outlier in the perception of the world, in the perception of democratic, let's put it this way, democratic West. Mm-hmm. Now, along comes Trump, who sort of sounds like Putin, could behave like Putin, and Putin feels, look, this will validate my, you know, his role in the world, that, you know, he is not alone in this. You know, there are other leaders now joining his league. Welcome to the club. Now, the reason I find this prospect, and by the way, I don't think that Putin would have, you know, Putin doesn't have a problem with America. Putin doesn't have a problem with individual countries, as long as they're not sticking for, you know, for not sticking sort of into the affairs.
They're not
of,
eating
of
his
Russia
lunch
and the former Soviet Union,
yeah.
And not trying to uphold his democratic values in which Putin clearly doesn't believe. So if America turns nationalist, if America turns isolationist, I'm sure Putin will certainly be very ready to make deals. And this is where it comes really dangerous, I think, because Trump and Putin are two people who are very capable of doing and love doing deals, be it business deals, be it sort of pragmatic deals. And to me, you know, Putin is obsessed with this idea of a new Yalta agreement, basically dividing the spheres of influence. And everything that Trump has said so far suggests that he will be very happy to go along with that. Now, the prospect of these two men sitting together and Trump saying, you know what, Vladimir, you know, you've got a point, you know, this is your format, but this is your backyard, I'm not particularly interested in it. I think, you know, that will come at a cost of the fate of the countries that aspire to be with the West. And I find that, you know, particularly Ukraine and the Republic of Georgia, and I find that incredibly sad and dangerous. And we have, you know, historical examples of this totally sort of demagogue leaders who think they can sort of, they get along and they do this kind of deals as Stalin did with Hitler in the 1930s. Then they go to war with each other because both men are completely unpredictable.
Right, and then you have to as those two were, and I suppose the other piece of this too is the Baltics. I don't think we should forget about that because I think there's been so much attention that has been given to what's gone on in Crimea and Ukraine, but. The Baltics have been, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, have been in a very, very tense state ever since they regained independence. And they're very concerned.
And the only thing that's deterring Russia is obviously their membership of NATO and their membership of the EU. Now, the security guarantees of the Baltic states lies with America, ultimately. Obama has quadrupled the military spending in the region, has beefed up security. America has held and NATO have held exercises. Now, Trump doesn't seem to be particularly bothered about that part of the world. In fact, he's not particularly bothered about America's role in NATO. He's been talking about suspending America's role in NATO. And if that does happen, then that will give complete green light to Putin to destabilize, ultimately, members of NATO and probe the whole premise of Article 5.
Wow. Arkady Ostrovsky, thank you very much for being with us. The Invention of Russia is the book. If you want more on that, I suggest you pick this book up and read it about how it is that Putin came to power, how it is that how Russia has found itself in the post-Cold War, where everybody thought, well, maybe, they lose the Cold War. But did they really? And now, where they sit as they look at this is a the Russia, Mother Russia, the Soviet Union, all of the 1,000 years of that political cultural institution, always very, very, very expansionist and looking out at its own, at what's around it, and has five times the amount of time to think about it that the United States has had to think about it. And I think that's one of the things that we always misjudge or misread, especially when it came to U.S. involvement in Europe and in Asia, that we look at ourselves as these great democratic heroes. But the reality is that people have been doing this for much longer than we have, and there is some wisdom. And sometimes we get caught up in our own ignorance about the way that these people will operate, and we hope that they're going to operate like us, and they're certainly not. And I think that's a lot of what I got out of this book. So thank you very much, Arkady, and congratulations on it.
Thank you. Great to be on your show.
All right. Well, we've got coming up right now, Violeta Podramatic, not from former Soviet Union, although that's a shocker to most people.
Most of the things I say are shocking.
Has the WGN traffic trouble spots.
East